This is the Quality News Network. At a town meeting in Cleveland, Ohio today, President Bush declared that military commanders, not politicians, will show the way forward in Iraq. An interim assessment of the progress being made will be presented by the end of the week. About 95% of the Red Mosque compound in Islamabad has been contained by the Pakistani army, which staged a pre-dawn raid today. The head cleric of the mosque, founded by his father back in the 60s, was killed by Britain's knighting of author's children as human shields fired rocket-propelled grenades and machine guns at the Pakistani army. Some 50 militants in all were killed in the day-long battle. In Afghanistan, 17 civilians were killed when a suicide bomber blew himself up near a NATO convoy. Al-Qaeda-linked Taliban extremists took the responsibility. Ayman al-Zahari, al-Qaeda's second-in-command under Osama bin Laden, has issued his 52nd video. The latest one threatens a, quote, precise response, end quote, to Britain's knighting of author Salman Rushdie. They've been angered at his supposed blasphemy of Islam ever since he published the Satanic Verses in 1988. Two of Iran's leaders have issued death sentences since then. His recent knighthood has further incensed al-Qaeda. In London, a jury was unable to reach a verdict in the trial of the last two suspects in the planned bombing of the city's transit system 2 years ago. Four others were convicted yesterday. In New Jersey, federal prosecutors are petitioning the court to keep the names secret of potential jury members in the Fort Dix terrorism trial. Attorneys say jurors may be fearful of reprisal brought on by international publicity. Six men are charged with conspiring to kill soldiers at the New Jersey Army base. Five people were killed earlier today when a small plane crashed into two homes in Sanford, Florida, near Orlando. The twin-engine Cessna tried to make an emergency landing when it crashed and caught fire. And wildfires are continuing to burn 11 western states, fueled by high temperatures and strong winds. The blazes have torched thousands of acres and dozens of homes. New York is bracing for the first heat wave of the season. 300 cooling centers have been opened. Utility crews are attempting to prevent power outages. 40 people died in New York last year from a heat wave. This is the Quality News Network. Science and business up next.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press, How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, six elections, five space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters' news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
A team from Caltech has found glimpses of the most distant and oldest galaxies ever seen. The team used the giant Keck telescope in Hawaii to make the discovery. For the first time since 1918, it snowed in Buenos Aires. Yesterday's snowstorm coincided with Argentina's National Independence Day. China has executed its former head of its FDA. The country blamed him for its contaminated product woes. In an effort to stimulate her country's economy, France's economic minister gave a speech to Parliament saying that her countrymen spend too much time in contemplation and not enough time working. Christine Lagarde proposed aggressive tax breaks and told her compatriots to stop thinking and get to work. Home Depot is forecasting a 15% decline in its earnings per share. The world's largest home improvement store chain is blaming the housing slump. The most expensive home in the country has been listed in Beverly Hills, the former home of William Randolph Hearst, a compound actually containing four houses and three swimming pools on 6.5 acres, is being offered at $165 million. Consumer borrowing jumped 6.4%, the largest increase in 6 months, and double what the Fed had forecast. Oil is up 62 cents a barrel right now at $72.81. At the close on Wall Street today, the Dow plummeted 148 points, ending up at 13,501. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to verse 12, chapter 12, page 12, and book 12 of Strictly Confidential. I'm your host, Peter Godbold, and welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you'll find links to all of the guests, as well as to the chat room, and the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can find out about all of the other wonderful progressive programs on this network. Again, the link for all of that and more is at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. The call-in line, I'll get this memorized one day. You know, we changed our call-in line numbers. Our COMREX system, as you probably know, is down for a little while. It's been sent to the factory for repair, so unfortunately, for a little while, our toll-free lines are down. They're actually working, I believe. It's just that we have no way of answering them. The telephone number is 304-658-5912 in West Virginia. And email comes in to peter@headonradionetwork.com, and I try to check email during the breaks. I received several emails last night from listeners who thanked me for playing My Forbidden Lover is the dance track of the night. I got a huge kick out of that. I really love that track, and thank you for letting that you liked it, too. I love you guys. That's just near and dear to my heart that you guys like that song. I love you so much. Our guest tonight is the Reverend Elder Nancy Wilson of Metropolitan Community Church. MCC is a worldwide church, and at this point, I think every country just about it has an MCC. It's a Christian church with an outreach to the GLBT community. Now, the fundies, of course, are fond of calling it a gay church, as if there were temple prostitutes like in the Old Testament, but in fact, it is a Christian church. We'll talk with the Reverend tonight about the church and the church's outreach to the gay community. And by the way, it is a church, regardless of what the German shepherd, Pope Benedict, said today with his mumblings and rumblings about Vatican II. And anyway, actually, I need someone to talk to at MCC because I can't remain a Methodist any longer with the Bush Library coming to Southern Methodist University. So I'm church shopping, so you guys will be privy to that. Reverend Elder will be joining us at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am going to start with this particular story because it has been skipped for three or four nights now, primarily because it is a long story. And if I wait too long to do it, toward the end of the program, that we run out of time. So I'm actually going to do it as a first story tonight because it's an important story. I'm going to do a little bit of an intro. It's about the revisionist Christians who are trying to set us up with Reconstructionists and Dominionists and taking over the planet as a theocracy for the, quote, Christian church, at least their version of it. I'm doing this little bit of an intro here because I want to bring anyone up to speed. Our old listeners know all about it, but I'll do this intro, and then I'll actually get into the main story. But this is Operation Potomac. Now, there's a fellow, a Reverend William Entwistle, and he's got a great solution to incorrigible juvenile delinquents, and that's to stone them to death. He says the stoning penalty is clearly called for in the Bible, and he's quoting Deuteronomy, and he says he's not ashamed to say that the punishment should still apply today. And then he goes on to say that it displays the wisdom and the mercy of God in restraining the wicked so that the righteous might flourish in peace. And it's those who reject this law that should be embarrassed, not us, for they are reproaching God and have cast aside his testimony and have cast Christ aside and set their own imaginations for the blessed word of God. Now, he wrote this piece in the Chalcedon Report. It's a magazine of Christian Reconstructionists. And Right now, he's serving as the vice president of an organization called the National Reform Association, or NRA. Basically, Reconstructionists want to impose biblical law, or more accurately, the literal interpretation of the Old Testament as the instead of the Constitution in the United States. And under their view, democracy needs to be scrapped and replaced with a theocratic, faith-based, literal reading of the Old Testament with no mercy. In a reconstructed society, government is dramatically scaled back. What they want to do is, for instance, welfare and social programs are completely abolished and replaced by church-run efforts. Now, you can imagine if you're a gay person or if you're a Jewish person, any person who does not fit in with what the Christians want you to be, the kind of welfare and social services you're going to find when you approach one of those churches for help. They also want to do away with public schools, and leaders look at the Bible and not the Constitution as the governing document of this country. They, of course, quote all the passages from the Old Testament. They want to institute the death penalty for a number of offenses, striking or cursing a parent, adultery. Well, that would get rid of a lot of Republicans right there. Homosexuality and chastity. Oh, there we go. Rape of a betrothed virgin. Now, I guess you can rape women as long as they're not betrothed. You can get the death penalty for witchcraft and blasphemy and propagation of false religious doctrine. That means anything but their flavor. And they prefer stoning as the method of execution. They also argue that the Bible sanctions slavery and puts women in a second-class status. And the way they phrase it is that it's a God-ordained order. God above all, man joyfully under God, woman lovingly under man, and animals at the bottom. Frankly, I would put my animal, my little dear sweet doggy, higher in the social order than those people. They indicate that the church needs to be planted in a nation, and it will grow and faithfully make, I assume they're using Miracle-Grow to pull this off. They're saying that secularism is completely false and has to be wiped out. Now, what you have to understand is that this is the extreme, full-blown version, and it's not the version that you hear them speak of very often, but there's a stripped-down version of it. It's slightly watered down, and they believe it, but they don't speak it as loudly, and that's groups like the Christian Coalition, which you do hear about, and Focus on the Family and others who are completely on board with this. And they've been planning this for years with right-wing Christians taking control of government and local school boards to the White House. They want to create, in fact, they've created a completely political arm, and it develops campaigns and candidacies and people to run those campaigns. There are think tanks, the whole nine yards. The Reconstructionists, they go back to the 16th century, but they kind of spiked it up and put it on steroids these days. Now, see, they believe that eventually that the Reconstructionists have to take control because the Bible mandates it. In other words, they think that Jesus Christ is not going to come back until society has been rebuilt to their liking. In other words, they think they are in control of the coming of Christ. They have to make America in their image, and then Jesus Christ will come as if Jesus Christ needed their help. So what they're doing is, they want to go about the purification of America, and it's this whole second coming thing. And that view is called postmillennialism. And there's another view called premillennialism, but that's not what we're talking about there. This is the more dangerous version, the postmillennialism. And by the way, remember we were talking about the mayor the other night, the one down there in Fort Lauderdale, I believe, that wants to put in the pay toilets to keep the homosexuals out of the restroom that the police say are not existent. Dr. James Kennedy, which we determined the other evening is funding the mayor along with several other stealth candidates in the city commission. He's the guy, Kennedy is the guy that runs Carl Ridge Ministries. He's also a Reconstructionist and has Reconstructionist ties. And there's another fellow hooked up with them. Okay, not sure if you can hear me. I have lost some audio in my headset here, but we're going to continue on. In addition, there's a George Grant, and he's one of the real hate mongers of the Christian people. And he wrote a book. Oh yeah, his book is available in the Christian bookstore from Focus on the Family. You see, all these people are in bed together. Dobson sells the books of the extreme right wingers and the Reconstructionists. Yet he doesn't come out. Also, they hate the National Education Association. They hate the Education Association because they call them the Trojan horse in American education. And we also have George Bush. I'm preoccupied with the audio for a second. I'm going to do this last sentence, then we'll cut to break to see if this. His welfare guru, he's been influenced by the Reconstructionists too. In fact, it was a Reconstructionist who coined the term compassionate conservatism. So that's really the introduction, and the next I'm going to get into the actual story, but I wanted to give you an overview. So what we'll do at this point in time, my name is Peter Godbold. We're coming up on a break, and you're listening to Strictly Confidential, 304-658-5912, and we're streaming exclusively on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any coursers like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business. Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS. What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Friday on Foxed Up with John Fox at 10 a.m. Eastern, where we'll take a closer look at Jeff Beckley.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
We'll hear from Jeff in his own words, his thoughts on artistic creativity, his jazz influence, and on spirituality.
I'm not so sure that some guy in the sky with a beard baked you in an oven and put his finger in your belly button and that's how you came about.
We'll even hear that Nina Simone track that John Fox mentioned.
Lilac one.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Okay, we're back now, and I think we have that little problem worked out. Everything seems to be running fine now. The story I wanted to tell you about is the latest adventure of the Christian Reconstructionist, and this story takes place near Asheville, North Carolina, and it's just a few miles off of Interstate 40. There's the Lifeway Ridgecrest Conference Center. Now, that's a Southern Baptist building and facility. It is a sprawling 1,300-acre compound in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's not easily located, mind you. The address can't be found via Google Maps or traced on the GPS system via address. But it is the mecca for many, many hundreds of religious right-wing activists. Now, they've just made their way there just a week or so ago. Well, in fact, it was this month, July, for the Worldview Super Conference. It's the nation's moral, well, as far right as you can get, it's their moral, well, I don't know. There's not a word for it because it's not really moral, so it's a confusing concept. Their major point is that Christians are in danger of being persecuted in America, as if. Now, they've gathered this this together and calling it the Preparing This Generation to Capture the Future. And it's hosted by American Vision, and it's to help Christians build a truly biblical worldview. And by the grace of God, they're going to work together to make America a truly Christian nation for our children. Now, it's based in Powder Springs, Georgia. American Vision puts out tons of material for the Christian Reconstructionist movement. They argue that the rewriting of American history and dismantling secular democracy and reconstructing America covered or governed under biblical law is what they need to do. They want to reimpose the criminal code of the Old Testament and apply the death penalty for homosexuals and adulterers and fornicators and witches and juvenile delinquents and anyone who spreads false religion, which we already know is anyone but them. And it's a very radical theocratic agenda, but this is the representation of the extreme right, which, of course, we see it watered down in other organizations. Some of the most powerful outfits of the religious right are there, the Alliance Defense Fund, the Religious Rights Lawyers, which is outfitted by Jameson, and other religious broadcasters helped to create that. The Homeschool Legal Defense Association is involved. Of course, Jerry Falwell's Liberty University, the late Jerry Falwell, is got his university set up with that. The event is promoted heavily and by the Traditional Values Coalition and a facility that's owned, again, by the Southern Baptists. And, of course, that's completely and very closely aligned with the Bush administration. Now, in the opening prayer on day one, they prayed that the sovereignty of God and God's people, namely the folks like that at the conference, would restore America to a biblical. They said that, well, we know you've been called here to be responsible servants in the advancement of the kingdom through the proclamation of the gospel and the application of your word in every area of life. Speaker after speaker was there, and there was just a huge blow-up and hate-filled speech against us and people who want a participatory democracy, and they want to do a radical makeover by the fundamentalist Christians. They feel that the world is doomed unless a rigid form of government led by the fundamentalists comes along. They say we need a new vision. Now, the former head of Preacher Kennedy's, he's the Carl Snake guy, he was there, and he said we've lost our biblical heritage and our Christian birthright. These people, again, it's a several-day conference. These people really go at it. They say there's a putrid stench in this culture, and every evening on the evening news they hear about it. And what they're saying is that by God's grace they're going to reclaim the heritage, and without any apologies to atheists or what they call neo-pagans, this is a Christian nation, never mind the Constitution built on Christian ideas. That was later followed by claims that the nation is increasingly hostile to religious people and in great need of Christian Anti-Defamation League. And it's interesting that they say that defamation is a precursor to persecution and marginalization, and that inevitably leads to the final stage of religious cleansing. So here they're saying that what they're experiencing, these Reconstructionists and Dominionists, is actually what they're putting other people through. They're saying that they're at risk of genocide, and that they're at risk of the secular people of the United States doing to them what's been done before. They attacked the public school system and encouraged removing all Christian children from public schools, and also recommended the Ridgecrest bookstore, conveniently located right there, because it's full of materials and curriculums that parents might be interested in escaping the public school system. There was a lengthy rant the first day by the Baptist preacher from Texas. His name was Bauckham. Now, he's saying that he was very proud that he actually introduced a resolution to the Southern Baptist Annual Convention for them to pull their members out from the school system. And they're saying that if they continue their children to Caesar for the education, they're going to be coming home as Romans. There's an interesting thing here. This Bauckham guy is the only African-American there at the conference. He noted that his son travels with him full-time, and Trey goes with him everywhere. Trey's 14 years old, he says. He says, when our sons reach the age of 13, they go through a rite of passage. I assume what he means by that is they rape and kill their first lesbian. That's what we've been hearing from them lately anyway. And when they enter into manhood, the mother closes up the books and turns them over to her, because there are things that only a man can teach a man. I guess probably what the best knot is to use to tie up a gay guy and set him on fire. The second day, there was a fellow named Doug Phillips who declared that God created the universe in 7 days, and all the literal understanding of the Genesis, and again beat up education, and it was just an amazing thing. They're saying that yes, they also again call for the death penalty for youngsters who curse their parents, and get this, saying that the preferred method of capital punishment should be stoning, because rocks are everywhere. So it seems to me in this conference they want to do away completely with the judicial system, and just if you upset any of these Reconstructionists and these theocratic people, you just pick up the first rock and start killing folks, and that's just fine. There's just seems to be, you know, my way or the highway, which is pretty much the way things go with those folks. They know that they're fringe people. It's a huge organization, and so this was kind of a pep talk for the whole thing. Now, it's interesting, these segments was a guy named Bates, who did a segment on the UFOs. Some American claims that they are space aliens, but really they're angels, and some of the angels are good, and some of the angels are bad, and he said that Joseph Smith, who is the founder of Mormonism, and the Muslim prophet Muhammad had both been visited by bad angels. And so that's it. There's been a major conference. We'll probably not hear a whole lot more about that, because they'll go back under their rocks for a while. But this is the sort of top-down thing that we're faced with in this country. A mean-spirited, jacked Jesus who's going to come out and punish us all. It's an amazing thing. What we'll do at this point is we'll come up on a breakdown. We'll go to our guest after we come back from the break. You're listening to Strictly Confidential, 304-658-5912. I'm your host, Peter Godbold, and we're streaming exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. Bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here, nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff, did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Something strange takes a hold of me. Every time I hear his name, it changes my mind, so I can't wait to see. But really, I don't complain. All lightning strikes when it touches my hand. The earth beneath me subsides. Thunder runs deep in my heart. There's no one there.
Ah, welcome back. Welcome back, and I'm so glad that we're still here. I tell you what, I was concerned there in the first half hour. I had an unexplained audio glitch, and I was so concerned that we might lose our guest again because we had lost her once and had to reschedule. We had those storms that passed through, and I'm awfully glad she's back with us tonight. We have the Reverend Elder Nancy Wilson with us this evening. She is the moderator of Metropolitan Community Church, and I've been joking with you guys over the last week or so that unless your name is Jesus, you can't get any higher in the Metropolitan Community Church. She has a long, distinguished record of service with the Metropolitan Community Church. She studied at Boston University, the School of Theology, a Rockefeller Scholarship, and she holds a Master of Divinity from Cyril and Methodius Seminary in Detroit. And she and her partner of 27 years are both actively work for same-sex marriage and equality, and they married each other in Massachusetts. Welcome to Strictly Confidential, Reverend.
Well, thank you,
Wilson. I'm so pleased to have you here this evening. I was a little bit concerned when the audio went strange because I certainly didn't want to have to reschedule you again. I've been so much looking forward to talking with you. I'll tell you a little bit about our audience to begin with. We have a large of straight listeners. all very progressive and some of the smartest people around who were interested in the church and probably don't know much about it. We have a large number of GLBT folks out there too. So if you wouldn't mind giving us a little bit of an overview, we'd appreciate it.
Yes, Metropolitan Community Churches is almost 40 years old. This is our 39th year. And we started in the late 60s. And you can kind of think about the civil rights movement and the women's movement and so many things that were happening at that time in the United States. And, of course, gay liberation sort of burst forth about 1969 at that time. But just right before that, Troy Perry started Metropolitan Community Church. Troy was a gay man who was a Church of God, a prophecy minister, which he says it is a denomination to the right of Attila the Hun. Was very conservative Pentecostal, but he came out as a gay man. He was kicked out of his church and spent a little time in the army, came out of the army and came out of the closet in the late 60s, but really felt a terrible loss of his faith and religion and believed that in some way that God was calling him to start a church that would be open to gay people as well as all people. And so October 6, 1968, he started a church in his own living room and invited people openly in his worship service. And this is a time when, of course, homosexual acts were illegal in California, where it was also illegal in much of the country for gay people to assemble. And so this is a very daring act, just before the birth of gay liberation and the Stonewall Rebellion in New York in 1969. And so MCC quickly, people heard about it, read about it, loved the idea, and groups began sprouting up all over the United States and now in many countries, and we have hundreds of churches now in about 28 countries around the world. And our church is we're a very progressive Christian church. We consider ourselves a Christian church, but we're open to everybody. Our church helped start the first gay synagogue in Los Angeles. We're a church that has complete respect for other religions, and that's very important, what we do and what we believe. And our church has always been on the forefront of civil rights and also of human rights for all people.
Well, you know, it really changed my life. I remember when Troy wrote the book, "Is My Shepherd, and He Knows I'm Gay."
Yeah.
When I got a hold of that book, it really opened a whole new world for me. I was very involved with MCC when it first formed here in Tallahassee. Since then, I moved to Oregon and have been down many different roads. It was a number of years ago. But I'll never forget the doors that Troy Perry opened. It's very powerful, and MCC is an interesting mix when you go to church. You know, there are people there from evangelical backgrounds. There are people there from Catholic background. It's sort of an evangelical meets Catholic meets Methodist sort of a worship service.
Absolutely, and what we felt from the beginning was that it was very important that everyone would feel that there was something they sort of recognized in worship, and at the same time to sort of move beyond that to a very open style, and so we attract people from. We attract a lot of former Catholics and a lot of former evangelicals, because in most cases in those churches they are not accepting at all of gay and lesbian people, and it'll be a long time, probably before those things change in those churches.
Well, I agree, and I have to tell you, Ms. Wilson, I have a somewhat ulterior motive for having you on. You know, I've gone back to the Methodist church that I grew up in. I live in a small community about 20 miles outside of Tallahassee. It's just a little rural country church, but that's fine. You know, I know the people there, and you know the Methodist church has the slogan of open hearts and open minds, but they don't always practice that. But
right.
I'll be quite honest with you. A lot of us are very, very upset about Southern Methodist University taking on the Bush Library. Even though the White House hasn't formally announced it, the fact of the matter is that it's pretty much done. The bids have already gone out. And you know, this was an undercover sort of thing. Apparently, since 2001, the White House has been working with Southern Methodist University, with the board of directors, the trustees, I think that's a better word.
Right.
And as it turns out, a lot of those people are very deeply involved. in the Bush administration as fundraisers and personal friends, executives from the oil industry.
Right.
And I've got to tell you, Nancy, that this is, for me, frankly, is the last straw. I honestly just can't go to my grave being formally associated with an organization that does that. There are a lot of us who are very upset by that. I know that, you know, being in the position you're in, you really can't go out on a political limb, but are you hearing about this at MCC?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I actually heard about it through MCC, but I certainly have been reading about it in, I think, Christian Century Magazine, other kinds of newspapers, and, you know, just it is big news in religious circles, and I think in mainstream religious circles particularly. But I think, you know, it is all about money and connections, and schools are very dependent on, you know, money from corporations, and you have this whole, you know, here is this very strong good old boys connection that's what it's all about. And I think we just see that in the way this government has operated, in particular this administration. You know, it comes down to those very basic things about money and oil and power and, you know, whatever ideals about justice or other kinds of things. And it is a shame when a school, in some sense, gets so beholden to those forces that it can't listen to its own, I'm sure, faculty and students who people who are United Methodists in general. Hillary Clinton's a United Methodist. And, you know, United Methodist is very interesting, has a kind of broad range of political viewpoints. People from different
Yes, and Dick Cheney
people.
Is a United Methodist, too.
Yeah. So I think you certainly have that broad view, but I think that is really, you know, looking at what is probably the most unpopular presidency in the history of our country.
Yes. We, of course, we're very political here. That's the function of the show. But I'll be quite honest with you. We do not just my program, but a lot of us talk about faith and spirituality. And it seems that this is coming. What the assault on reason seems to be coming from the top down, from extreme religious right.
And,
there's confusion on our part because, you know, it seems that there are a lot of Christian voices that are never heard. You know, the media only picks up the loud Republican voice. It only picks up the extreme right-wing Christian voices. And so is it the media? Is it the right-wing Christians? I mean, all of us feel so disenfranchised here, progressives and gays and straights, all of us.
Well, I think the progressive religious folks have been very slow to use the media and not often very media savvy. And so programs like yours are extremely important that are both spiritually friendly as well as, you know, more progressive. But you look at how much money the religious right has poured into and used the media and used it very well. And that's just kind of overwhelming when you see the influence on even mainstream news, how much right-wing influence there is now, it seems to me, in mainstream news. And then that the Christian right often positions itself as the Christian point of view, sometimes in alignment with the Vatican as well, and has really not taken seriously more progressive religious voices. I think there are those who are working very hard to try to change that and change that point of view and let people know that there are people from, you know, very liberal and more progressive points of view who also are religious. There are Christians all over the country who are kind of fed up with a religious right emphasis on, you know, there are two moral issues, abortion and homosexuality, rather than looking at what about the moral issues of we're at war in Iraq. There's enormous poverty and hunger and genocide going on around the world. How about those as moral issues that Christians should be caring about?
Yes. There's something, a new twist to this. They seem to be trying to enlist black Southern ministers, and what they're telling them, they're telling them that the problem is that the homosexuals are about to place our the way they're putting it is we're going to place our rainbow flag on top of the capitals of every state in the South, and they're saying that we are actively trying to replace the progress that the black people have made and replace their politicians and their elected officials to promote the homosexual. So now they're attacking us from that direction. They're trying to divide us with black folks. It's just appalling to me.
Right. But I think there are lots of voices, both in Congress, politically, and also spiritually, of people who are really smarter than that, who will not be manipulated by the white-dominated religious right. And, you know, I think there are, you know, people all over the country who are speaking up and forming new coalitions. And I believe, you know, I'm really excited by the work that Jim Wallace does with the Sojourner community. They're a progressive Catholic. There are certainly there are strong African-American religious leaders who are very supportive of civil rights for all people, including gay and lesbian people. And I think those voices, in the end, will prevail. I think at the same time, there has been some erosion, and there is fear that can be created. We live in a culture now where, you know, I think people are afraid, and people are sometimes afraid of what they're going to lose. We've been taught to be afraid of immigrants now. We've been in a whole new wave of anti-immigration, you know, politics that is just really quite disgusting. It's quite...
Yes, it is. It is. Here on the radio network, we call it, you know, they're trying to make everybody afraid of brown people from over the Mexican border. It's always some group.
Yeah, I heard Trent Lott made a comment the other day that, you know, the way he keeps goats out of his garden is to put up an electrical fence, and, you know, they just get popped a few times, and then they learn from it. People must be as smart as goats, he says. And so we just put up an electrical fence and pop people from Mexico, and, of course, they'll give up and go home. And it's just horrible. It's just like a terrible racist totally blaming what are truly the victims of our economic policy, and people who are caught in the middle and whose families who are risking their lives, you know, to come here for any kind of economic help and health, and what people go through. If you've ever lived in a place where a lot of immigrants, I lived in Los Angeles for 22 years, and certainly knew in my church, in my community, and knew lots of people whose lives were very deeply affected by living across borders, and I know the struggles they went through, and these are good and decent people, and to see the way that our country would treat people is tragic, and it's really un-American.
It is un-American. It is tragic. We did a story here, I think it might have been last night or last Friday, about the Metropolitan Community Conference. I think it just took place in, was it Scottsdale?
Yes.
Yes, and we did a story about a fellow there from Jamaica who had to go, I think they have 150 people down there at the MCC in Jamaica, and they have to use false names and how persecuted they are. And it just angers me so much, because according to the loud screaming Christian right voices, gay people only care about sex. We're not spiritual people, neighbors. We're not human beings. And this man, I don't know his real name. There was a fake name he was using, but it was just such a wonderful example to me.
Yes, I know the man you're talking about, and the people that were there at our conference from Jamaica. I visited Jamaica just a few months ago and visited our church there. And they have just an incredible story. And it's a story of another country that struggles a lot with its religious identity and with its history of colonialism and a history, I think, around, there's a lot of issues around race and sexuality in our world and in our hemisphere, and a lot of history that has to be lived down and lived through and healed. But it is really a moment right now in Jamaica's history where they're having to deal with this legacy of homophobia, and gay people who are now ready to be much more open and to live their lives and to fight for their rights, including their rights to be a church and to worship.
Yes. Amongst organizations like, for instance, Faith in America, I've been in contact, yes, I think Jimmy Creech, I think it's pronounced, I'm hoping to have him as a guest soon. He's committed to be a guest, but we haven't set a date. I'm judging from your website, it looks like you work with Faith in America.
Yes, we do. Mitchell Gold and Jimmy Creech. I've known Jimmy Creech since he was defrocked from the Methodist Church. I was at his trial in Nebraska probably about eight or nine years ago. And Jimmy was a Methodist minister, a heterosexual Methodist minister who was defrocked for supporting gay people and gay couples. He did a holy union in his church, and because of that, the Methodist Church took away his ordination. And Jimmy is a fighter for civil rights for all people, and especially for lesbian and gay people. He's been an amazing force, and Mitchell Gold has, you know, invested in several campaigns that we're working on in the U.S. and probably outside of the U.S. eventually. And he really wants to restore faith in America, in the sense of saying faith should be used to support also American values of democracy and equality and of freedom of speech and freedom of thought, and really moving against the idea of theocracy.
Yes.
We've done a Would Jesus Discriminate campaign in Indianapolis that's been extraordinarily successful at helping to dispel myths about Christianity and homosexuality.
Yes, I'm seeing that on your homepage. And by the way, I'm going to put up links for that. That's if you'd like to look, it's mccchurch.org. I highly recommend it. And I'm noticing you have a link there regarding transgendered people. I lived in Portland, Oregon for a number of years and attended MCC up there. And there were a lot of transgendered people that
yes.
went to MCC.
Yes, there are. We have transgendered clergy. The associate pastor of the church I attend here in Sarasota is transgendered. He's a wonderful man, and we have had transgendered clergy for many, many years in MCC and members. And I do think that's an issue that is also, in a sense, coming into its own in a new way in this time.
I have to agree. It seems like more and more we're hearing about transgendered people that, and we never heard about that in the past. They were even a subculture to gays
right.
and lesbians. I mean, even to us, a dark and mysterious
right.
group.
Right. But at our conference recently, we had a meeting of transgendered people in MCC, and there was a large group at this conference, and men and women and people who are in various places along their own journey. And so I think. Closet doors are opening in all kinds of ways, and people are, I think, being supported in their own journeys and in being themselves and being true to themselves.
Well, you know, it's so hard to maintain not faith in God, but faith that this planet and that the United
mm-hmm.
States can ever turn around because mm-hmm. of the darkness and the evil that gets spread by these right-wingers, and it's plain pure propaganda. I'm
yes.
wondering if we can ever recover.
Yes, well, I do think, you know, I guess I tend to have, on the other hand, that optimism that says I do believe there is this, what we call the very muddled middle in America, and that there's comes a point at which people, you know, they want to have faith in their government, they want to have faith president, but they also come to a point at which they realize, wait a minute, things are going in the wrong direction. And you hear that very consistently in the last election and coming forward, that there is a lot of desire for change, that, you know, we hear a lot of stuff about the economy and how good it is, but we know it's only good for a very small percentage of people, and it's very, very good for them. But clearly, most people in the United States have experienced a decline in their real income, certainly middle-class people and certainly the poor. And I think that that the part of the United States that there are people who, most people in America believe that there should be justice and there should be fairness. And when they realize and when people hear that things are not fair, most people in our country are open-hearted and want to know about that and hear about that. And when they think that things have gone too far, or when they believe they've been lied to by their government, they will make change, and change will happen. And it's hard because sometimes also it's hard not to be cynical because it seems like our political life is so incredibly dominated by, you know, multinational corporations that really, it feels like it's really them who rule the world. And it's at some of that corporate level that we really have to be dealing with things and making change and making a government that is more responsible and responsive to the people and less to corporate interests. And that level of corruption, I think, really so much of where our cynicism comes from. And it is very transparent that it is the right wing that has manipulated the religious right. And the religious right got some things out of that, some trade-offs that went there. But I think even some of them are breaking ranks, starting to look at things differently. I don't think religious conservatives can all be painted with one brush anymore. I think there are lots of people of goodwill who are not happy with the way in which religion has been used for political purposes.
Well, you know, this is absolutely true. I came across a site not too long ago. I can't place it in my mind right now, but it was of all things, Progressive Baptists. And
yes,
they were talking about, maybe you've seen the site, I can't, but they were talking about how the Baptist church has been taken over. And
oh, my
apparently
God.
In all of the church, there's kind of a core group of people who really love the Lord and understand what unconditional love is, and then there's another set that isn't. I think Jesus warned us about that.
That's right. You know, there are welcoming and affirming Baptists. We had one of them at our convention, Peggy Campolo, wife of evangelist Tony Campolo, and she was absolutely amazing and wonderful, just so incredible. We have allies and friends in Metropolitan Community Church. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people have religious allies all over in all different kinds of faiths and religious groups. And I think it's time for them to be speaking up even more and more and more. And I see that happening. I see heterosexual allies in churches and speaking up more and more and more. And I think that's only going to increase.
Well, you know, in the future, as time goes by, I've set up a program with an interview with a fellow from New Ways. We haven't set the date yet, but he's agreed to interview. Yes, in fact, we have one of our chatters. We have a chat room that's very active, and who's a member of New Ways who recommended the fellow. And I'm hoping to set up an interview with one of the temples in New York. A fellow sent me the directory of all the gay organizations out there. Apparently, there's a very large and also I'm told that I should really interview a Metropolitan Community Church minister from New York named Pat Thumgardner. Do you know her?
Pat Thumgardner, yes. Mm-hmm. I know her very well. Absolutely.
I understand she's a pistol ball.
Yes. Yes. She'd be a fabulous interviewer. She's chair of MCC's Global Justice Team, in fact, worldwide. And their church does a wonderful ministry with street transsexuals and also with queer youth. They opened the first shelter for queer youth in New York City. And they operate a food pantry that helps all kinds of people. In New York, they feed 8,000 people a month with their food pantry.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's just huge. Now, we were talking just the other evening with the representative from the new community center in Chicago, the new gay community center. We were talking about...
Wonderful place.
Have you seen it?
I've seen it. I was there just about 2 months ago. And what a...
Oh, I so wish I could.
Oh, my gosh. The best thing about it is in the middle of this, you know, it's a whole city block, and the Chicago Cubs donated a gymnasium, and just a beautiful, and there's a youth center on the second floor that is absolutely wonderful, and they have social workers and everything. And right in the middle of it is a Whole Foods, which is just so so perfect, perfect gay sensibility, you know. And then they have in the whole lobby of the gay center are these tables and chairs where people from Whole Foods can come and have their lunch. And what's exciting, we're at Metropolitan Community Church, we're actually planting a church in the center. And they've invited us
to
have one of their desks that they provide. And they have an auditorium, and we're going to be using that auditorium. I think services will be beginning in September.
Well, that's wonderful. I was impressed that there's an outreach there for for homeless gay kids, you know, were kind of treated badly. Sometimes, and I'm getting the impression that's something you do in a lot of the big city metropolitan community churches, also.
Yes, yes, and even some smaller places. You know, we have outreach to. We have MCCs in smaller cities and towns, and you know, in some ways, in those places, oftentimes there is no community center, and there's nothing, you know, for LGBT people except the church, and so the church oftentimes does it all. You know, it takes care of the youth, and it's the community center socially as well as spiritually. So, so there are even places, smaller cities, places where we do work with homeless youth as well.
That's just an amazing outreach. There's something else too I wanted to talk to you about. I mentioned, you know, bringing in someone from New Ways, and when I get in touch with them, Dignity, no doubt. But what about the Muslims? Do they have a group, or do they come to MCC and act as a subgroup, or do you see, because they're so discriminated against?
Yeah, there is gay and lesbian imams. Religious leaders in Canada and the United States, and there are Muslim groups, mostly, I think, in the San Francisco Bay Area, several other areas, certainly Washington, D.C. I know the imam there, and this is growing all over the world, but it's also been very interesting. Recently, MCC, we were in Turkey at a homophobia conference, and there were especially Muslims from what we'd call Western Asia, and the Kyrgyzstan and all of those places, who were really asking MCC to assist in helping to create space for Muslims to be able to worship. And this is something we certainly want to support, that LGBT Muslims would have the right within their own faith to practice their own faith and freedom, and to be able to do that. And, you know, people's stereotypes of Islam, where Muslims would say, oh, that's impossible, that can't be. But it is true. There are gay Muslims. There are openly gay Muslim teachers and leaders. And they often, you know, they can be very persecuted and very within their own faith. But there's also tremendous openness. And there are many people who identify as Islam who are not fundamentalists. The largest Muslim country in the world is Indonesia, and the fundamentalism, you know, like everywhere else, is beginning to have a foothold in Indonesia. But for the most part, Indonesia is not a fundamentalist country. There's and Islam has existed with other religions alongside it there and in other places. So we hope to be supporting people who are progressive Muslims and who will be open to LGBT people who are Muslims.
That's wonderful. That was our command from Christ, to love one another.
And Muslims are always welcome to come to MCC, and as Jews and people of no faith or whatever, we say it's sort of like an AA, you know, take what you leave the rest. And there's sometimes fellowship and community that can be created, and when there is no you know, gay mosque or gay-friendly mosque, perhaps. And, but we really do want to be the kind of community that can be a space, a safe space for people.
Well, I've got to tell you that I'm be attending the MCC in Tallahassee this coming Sunday. I know where it is, and I know that what time it is, and I haven't, you know, I've never been to the MCC here, although I didn't know the pastor. I work in a computer consultant capacity and during the day. And as it turns out, the pastor there, who I understand is taking a break right now, I'm not sure. But anyway, he worked at a company that I did computer service.
I think he's on a short sabbatical, but I think he'll be back probably in August or something like that. Yeah.
Well, I did. Paul, yes, Paul Amway, yes, that's it. Yes. Thank you. I couldn't key on the first name. And I did go to one of their, they had a pet blessing. It was something that's kind of like a Catholic. And I had never, and apparently it's kind of a Catholic thing that you get anyway. It's like, and so I obviously I love my dog to death, so I had to go to that. There was no, and
right.
Really the people there were just wonderful, just such a wonderful group of people. I really enjoyed it, but I've got to find something. I mean, in fact, Nancy, I don't even take communion at the Methodist Church, not because I can't, but because it's just sort of a form of silent protest, simply because I feel like if I can't get married in a church, I mean, why should I take communion? It's sort of a silent thing on my part. It doesn't maybe make sense, but, you know, we just get so excluded in everything we do. But I have to tell you, too, that in every way, MCC is welcome in every way on this program, and it is not necessary for you or anyone from MCC to have a predefined interview time. Just pick up the phone and call the number. We'll have the toll-free back, and we'll be announcing it on air soon, and I'll put you on.
Great.
I guarantee.
That's great to know. Well, that's wonderful to know.
Well, I seen it, and so... This is my 2 hours that the Head On Radio Network gives me, and pretty much I can do whatever I want to do, and that's what I want to do. And I'm going to say the same thing to people from New Ways and from the Jewish community and any other gay outreaches that I can get in touch with, because I just feel it's so important for us to grab onto something, because God knows the world is going down hard.
Yeah. Well, and it is important that the more people can communicate and can educate one another and inform one another, and people can grow in their understanding of whatever issues or differences or political issues, or all of those things are so important to a democracy. You know, because what happens is people have very limited sources of information or news. And when you can expand those sources of information and news, and that's one of the great things the Internet has done, the way it has really democratized information in some wonderful ways, in that it has made things a little more accessible to people, and even political information more accessible to people, which is a great thing.
Yes, it is. Well,
it's a wonderful thing you're doing.
Well, it's a wonderful thing you're doing, and I'm so honored to have you here. But honestly, I went around the everyone that could tell you this, the viewer in the chat room, that I was just crushed when we missed the first interview. I was just crushed, and it was due to storms, and I was so looking forward to that, and I'm so honored to have you here as a part of the program. I honestly am, and I sincerely would love to hear from you and from anyone else at MCC.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, anytime you have a spot or a hot topic that you want to talk about, I'd be glad to come on or talk to people or whatever you'd like to do. So
that's wonderful. It's so good of you to be willing to do that. We're kind of nutty around here, but we certainly mean well. We have our hearts in the right place anyway.
You're doing great things.
Well, and you are too. And again, thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining us this evening. And please keep us in mind for anything that might come up, Ms. Wilson.
Thank you so much
for joining.
Thank you. Blessings.
And yes, ma'am. And to you too. Have a wonderful evening.
You too.
Wow. I've got tears in my little gay eyes. It's just so nice to talk to someone some sort of a religious setting or spiritual setting. You know, I tell you, attending a Methodist church and being a gay person in the South is sort of like you just go just to be an example of this is what gay people are really like. I mean, and after a while, you know, you really need to fill your own needs, and you can't be an example forever. You got to. So I think what we'll do is we'll go ahead and do a delayed top of the hour. We have a special to break track that I picked out for Nancy's interview, and it's called Hallelujah, and it's just amazing what those gay guys dance to, and lesbians too. So anyway, it's a high energy Hallelujah, and we'll be back after this top of the hour, which is just a little bit behind schedule. And the telephone number is 304-658-4444. 5912, and this is Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold as your host, and we'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. Information gleaned from evidence discovered in the recent failed bombing attacks in London and Glasgow is pointing to an increased threat of terrorism in the United States this summer. An urgent multi-agency meeting is to be held at the White House Situation Room this week to assess the threat. ABC has learned that the meeting will be held to take steps to minimize or counter the threat. The information also suggests that an Al-Qaeda cell is on the way to the U.S. or is already here. In New Jersey, federal prosecutors are petitioning the court to keep the names secret of potential jury members in the Fort Dix terrorism trial. Attorneys say the jurors may be fearful of reprisal brought on by international publicity. Six men are charged with conspiring to kill soldiers at the New Jersey Army base. In London, a jury was unable to reach a verdict in the trial of the last two suspects in the planned bombing of the city's transit system 2 years ago. Four others were convicted yesterday. Ahmad al-Zawahiri, an Al-Qaeda 2 in command, the second in command under Osama bin Laden, has issued his 50-second video, and the latest one threatens a, quote, precise response, end quote, to Britain's knighting of author Salman Rushdie. They've been angered at his supposed blasphemy of Islam ever since he published the Satanic Verses in 1988. About 95% of the Red Mosque compound in Islamabad has been contained by the Pakistani army, which ended a stalemate by staging a pre-dawn raid today. The head cleric of the mosque, founded by his father in the 1960s, was killed by the army, but differing accounts say that his own followers shot him when he tried to surrender. Taliban-led resistance fighters, using women and children as human shields, fired rocket-propelled grenades and machine guns at the Pakistani army. Some 50 militants in all were killed in the all-day battle. In Afghanistan, 17 civilians were killed when a suicide bomber blew himself up near a NATO convoy. Al-Qaeda-linked Taliban extremists claimed responsibility. A town meeting in Cleveland, Ohio today, President Bush declared military commanders, not politicians, will show the way forward in Iraq. An interim assessment of the progress being made will be presented by the end of this week. New York is bracing for a heat wave this season. 300 cooling centers have been set up. This is the Quality News Network.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
Researchers say Pfizer's anti-smoking drug Chantix may eventually be used to curb the cravings for alcohol and other addictive substances. For the first time since 1918, it has snowed in Buenos Aires. Yesterday's snowstorm coincided with Argentina's National Independence Day. In an effort to stimulate her country's economy, France's economic minister gave a speech to Parliament saying that her countrymen spend too much time in contemplation and not enough time working. Christine Lagarde proposed aggressive tax breaks and told her compatriots to stop thinking and start working. In Zimbabwe, executives have been arrested and their companies have been fined for refusing to cut prices in half. Zimbabwe's inflation rate is between 5,000 and 9,000%. The most expensive home in the country has been listed in Beverly Hills, the former home of William Randolph Hearst. A compound actually containing four houses and three swimming pools on 6.5 acres is being offered at $165 million. Sprint Nextel has dropped 1,000 subscribers. They claim that they hampered the company's customer service lines too often with issues that had already been resolved. And others were seeking private information on fellow subscribers. Ford announced it will collaborate with Southern California Edison to produce electric vehicles. At the close on Wall Street today, the Dow was down 148 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And welcome back to Strictly Confidential. I'm your host, Peter Godbold. The telephone number is area code 304-658-5912. I wanted to give you the website address for MCC, should you wish to locate a church. There are a list of all the MCCs. There's a find at MCC. It is www.mccchurch.org, and it's a fine group of people. I'm going to go this Sunday myself. I'll tell you, you'll laugh at me when I tell you, you know, during the first half hour, I was a little, you know, we had a little sound glitch. It was no big deal. I got over that. But, you know, it occurred to me, you know, I was doing that long story, you know, beating up the fundamentalists and the right-wing Christians, and I was just going on and on, and it occurred to me in the middle of that, oh, my God, she's on hold, and she's listening to me. And it was like, you know, I felt like, oh, my God, here's somebody with a divinity listening to me going on about the right, and I thought to myself, and I really got totally nervous, and, you know, I'd never talked to her before. It turns out, she was a wonderful, wonderful person. I enjoyed talking to her. But she scared me. She scared me, and I hadn't even talked to her yet. Oh, my. We had something interesting come in last night. One of the Pakistani clerics, a huge militant, they were holed up in a mosque over in Islamabad, and they were surrounded by military, and they were trying to force them out, and there were supposed to be like 850. It was this huge mess. And so anyway, this Aziz guy, he slips out in full Muslim drag. He goes out dressed, in a burqa and high heels. And he gets caught. You know, the military police realize that he's there, and they bust him for having the burqa and the high heels, and he's got his beard on, and you know, it just serves him right. You know what I mean? It serves him right. See, they're going around, they're killing all the gay people, they're murdering them, you know, on the spot, whatever. And you know, this is the example of why Mr. Aziz needed someone gay there, because if he had just one or two gay Muslims in there, they could have told him to never flee a mosque under siege unless you're wearing a sensible pair of shoes. They could have also given him some lessons about tucking, because I imagine, in addition to that large beard he was concealing, there was an unsightly burqa bulge in his nether regions. You know, gay people could be so useful when you're trying to escape a mosque under siege. In full drag. You know, they could have told, if gay people had been there, they could have told him about X.com. You see, at XDress.com, he could have bought a transformer anti-bulge gas. Yes, he could have bought. In fact, they have pictures there. There's a before picture, and the man's bulge is huge. And then there's an after picture, the transformer anti-bulge gas. And and it's just so tiny, there's hardly even a little tiny bump there. And so, you know, this is another reason. The gay folks could have told him about the Transformer anti-bulge, and if gay people had been there, they could have sent him to www.drag-queen.com, where he could have found a wonderful pair of peep-toe heels available in black or red, and they're available in men's sizes 9 through 16. And they have this wonderful little strap up high that, in fact, it's a double strap so that you can run from the military police and your high heels just won't fly off. So he would have fared a lot better if he had been wearing these sensible shoes, and they're really nice 5-inch heels, and they're available 8-inch heels also. So he could have worn that and his anti-bulge undies, and he would have probably gotten away with that. If he didn't like those shoes, he could have worn the Mary Jane pumps. They're available in black and white also available in 5 and 8-inch heels, and they come in men's sizes 9 through 16. The gay told him about the underwire bra for silicone. That's also available at drag-queen.com. They could have told him about hair remover cream for those nasty beards that you just have to get rid of before showtime. They could have told him all about that. And, you know, it's just a terrible thing that they're going around killing all the gay guys, because had there been some gay guys there, they would give him all the helpful tips so that he could have passed as a real woman when he went running out into the streets. And you know, he could have even... There are reviews here. Testimonials. Dear Extras, I just wanted to say how pleased I am with my recent purchase of the lace panties. They're so... The material is wonderful and the fit is great. Keep them coming with new designs. Sincerely, Jeff. And there's just a lot of testimonials here. He could have gotten a fine deal at dragqueen.com, or he could have gone to extras.com, and it would have solved the whole thing. He would have gotten away with it. But that's what they do. They go around and kill the gay guys, and that's a shame. We have a couple of callers, and I'm so glad to hear from you all. Let's see. I think Jim came in first, so I'll take it. Jim, how are you this evening?
Okay. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing fine. I really enjoyed talking to Nancy Wilson. That was fun for me.
Well, that was a very good interview. I enjoyed it also. And
I'm glad you did.
I did, really. Back in Columbia, South Carolina, I had a real good friend who was an MCC pastor, and I didn't attend the church because I'm one of God's frozen people, one of those Episcopalians, but nonetheless, my old friend Jim Lincoln, and he's no longer with us. And he was a dear friend, and he had a lot of good ideas. I used to refer to him as the Blessed Reverend. Sometimes he gets kind of hacked off at me, but nonetheless, that reminds me of Gil. I haven't thought about Gil in quite a while, but he was certainly a very fine person in his own way.
Was he did he pass away, or was he murdered?
No,
I mean, that's kind of a high visibility. I see. Yeah, so many of the good people do, don't they?
Yeah, we've lost an awful lot of good people in so many
we really have.
In so many areas, but I mean, if you think of what that plague has done to the arts and so many other things, and so many other people who have contributed massively to our culture.
It's true, Jim. It's true. And in fact, you remember the conversation we had with the woman from the Chicago Gay and Lesbian Museum the other evening. One of the things that came out is they would have had that museum 10, 20 years ago. Not museum, the community center. At least 10 years ago, except for the AIDS epidemic, took all of the funds that would have... We lost a whole generation of people.
Well, we did. Certainly did. And... you know, there are two books that I can recommend. One, of course, has been made by Gil into a film called And the Band Played On by Randy Schultz. And also, Randy Schultz wrote another book called Conduct Unbecoming. It's a very good book about the travails of gays and lesbians in the military. And I recommend those two books highly. They're both very well written. Of course, Randy Schultz is no longer with us, too, since he, too, fell victims of this plague. You had mentioned something earlier about the Southern Baptist Convention Center in North Carolina earlier.
Yes, I did. And apparently, it's right off I-40 near Asheville, is what my information tells me.
And this is what I wanted to tell you. When I was a boy, for, gosh, 5 or 6 summers, my parents sent me to camp at Camp Ridgecrest for boys. And,
yes.
You know, obviously it's changed an awful lot since the 50s when I was a camper there. And the motto of that camp was, God give us hills to climb and the strength to climb them. And it was basically interfaith. And there was none of this type of hatred or whatever that's being, I guess, preached by some of the successors of those people back then. Things have changed a great deal.
Absolutely. Jim, you know, we need you as a book reviewer. You know, you've read just about everything ever written. I've listened to you call Bob's show in the past. We know you've read everything ever written.
No.
We really need to. Oh, you have. We need to get you as a book reviewer.
Well, thank you for that. I enjoy reading books to friends, and you know, to me, I am a collector of books of all types of things. Mainly, most of my reading is centered on European history from 1914 to 1945, but I have other interests as well. And, you know, it's there is no frigate like a book, and I've always believed that. And that's the way I was brought up. And to have respect for the written word. And, you know, speaking of the written word, I was just thinking about some things in the Bible, trying to at least establish a relationship between what the guest that you just had. And I was just thinking about the types of people that Christ encountered when he had his ministry here on earth. And, you know, and the people who hated him the most, I guess, and I'm not a biblical scholar, and I don't pretend to be, but the people who hated him the most were the Pharisees, I believe. And they had a hate list that was just about as long as some of the hate lists that you've been talking about earlier. I mean, for example, like the Sumerians, they were considered religious heretics and ethically impure. And the Pharisees also said that sick people were believed to be sinners who had were being punished by God. And, of course, women were deemed unworthy of any type of discipleship, and tax collectors, the Roman soldiers, were regarded as the enemy, and the poor were considered, or people who neither had, you know, resources or the ability to maintain the so-called religious rites of purity that Pharisees so espoused, were thought to be beyond God's grace. And, of course, I think Christ, if I'm not mistaken, violently opposed these people, and it was these individuals who sought his death. And, you know, I can't help but think that there's a definite connection between some of the people that you've been talking about in today's world who have tried to paint all Christians with a very nasty brush, and that gives me cause for great concern.
Me too, Jim. Scares the hell out of me.
But, I mean, the very man whom they profess to honor and dignify, I think they're very poor stewards of the mission to which they supposedly are entrusted. And they certainly, I don't think they practice what Christ preached. That's just my humble opinion. And I just offer that up.
I completely agree. It's like things never really change, do they?
Everything changes, but it always stays the same. But, you know, that's the way it is. And unfortunately,
amen.
Things like hatred and stupidity, unfortunately, have a habit of getting their way. And it really makes me very, very sad. And it makes me just sort of like want to retreat into my own cocoon of my books and my own little world. And I know that makes sense.
Jim, I have to share this with you. You just used the phrase, it makes me want to retreat in my mind so clearly came back towards to my Barbara Cartland novels.
Oh, Lord.
Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. I certainly do.
Do you remember? You?
Oh,
that was
Queen of Romance.
Yeah, I said you're Bon Bon.
Lord, honestly, surely, I used to have big postcards of her, and I used to send them to people. And you were talking about somebody in a burqa who was going around in high heels. I used to spend a lot of time in the city in the 70s or in the early 80s, and there was.
So you didn't have heels in a burqa. Tell me you didn't.
No. But I used to. I was at a sidewalk cafe in Soho. And I looked up and I saw this guy in this prom dress and a wig and a tiara with a wand on roller skates. And I said, who in the hell is this? And oh, that's Rovarina.
Rovarina.
You remember Rovarina?
God. Oh, Jesus. No, but the name just strikes my heart to dancing.
And apparently he was a guy who used to work in some type of boring job in the financial district, I guess Wall Street, and he would from time to time get up in his outfit, and he was used to be quite a figure around the village and a quite, you know, and whether they'd have, you know, events in New York City and stuff like that, like parades and things. And,
yeah.
But he was, I was just absolutely floored when I saw this apparition skating down the street. And he would touch you with his...
Well, honey, I could just imagine. Us Southern boys, we're not used to carrying on like that in public.
Well, I thought it was a hoot, as you would say. I thought it was absolutely incredible. Anybody would have the courage to do that. And of course, it was, I guess you'd call it, what, camp drag? And that type
yes,
of thing.
Yes, sir.
And,
And the wand
about her in years for him, and I just wonder. I hope he's alive and well, and still skating around and being outrageous. Of course, outrageous has been, I think, reshaped by other figures other than he. I mean, if you look at Anna Nicole Smith of late fame, and are you familiar with that movie that she's done?
Well, I saw there was some no, I'm not familiar with the movie, but I did catch part of some series she did that it was so horrifying that I couldn't watch it. She was sort of staggering around. Yeah.
Yeah, she was just basically just peeled out, period. But she actually did a movie, and she's some type of secret agent or detective, and the opposition is trying to destroy her with these torpedo-shaped suppositories that are supposed that looked like, you know, something that were dropped out of a World War II airplane. And they were supposed to defeat the heroic Anna Nicole. And I thought to myself, well, compared to this, Rovarina is just nothing. I mean, I've never seen such outrageousness in my life as she. But, you know, nobody ever really says a whole lot about her. As far as I guess.
We know that's so true, Jim. They go on about the gay pride parades we've had about all the debauchery and carrying on and stuff, but, you know, all you got to do is say Anna Nicole, and that pretty much solves that issue, doesn't it?
Oh, good Lord. I mean, you know, I used to watch that reality show that she did on E! And she would come in there, and she would do all kinds of outrageous stuff. And you know, basically, she simply would just say these things, and I used to just sit there and wonder, love, and not a whole lot of praise, but not a whole lot of love either. I said, who is this woman, and why has she, you know, gotten into the national mainstream? Of course, it's just money and stuff like that, and I guess she was trying to make a living. And there's a special, The Life and Death of Anna Nicole. So if people want to be offended about outrageousness, I mean, there's enough of that going around on both sides of the aisle, what I'm trying to say, okay? Not to get too far. And
that's
I
a good
too
point.
Much of your time tonight if you've got other callers. I apologize for that.
No, sir. I'm glad to hear from you. We do have another caller and taker. But, Jim, I'm so glad to hear from you. I was concerned about you. I know you've had the very upsetting situation in the family, and I hope that you're holding together pretty well, and I hope you have some sort of support system there, maybe other family members.
And the thing, you know, when things like this happen, sometimes the fallout and the aftermath is worse than the actual experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you pick up the telephone, dial a number, and you realize that that number is no longer there. You know, I think it was Tennyson who once said one of his poems, to long for the touch of a hand that is gone and the sound of a voice that is still. So that's basically where it's at. And I thank you, and you have a good program and a good evening, and all my best to you and your father.
All my best to you too, Jim, and good night to you, sir. And we have, and I'm just so thrilled, we have Debbie on the phone, and I am so glad to hear from her. I have never, ever heard her voice that I know of on any of the shows, so I have no idea what Debbie sounds like. Debbie, you're strictly confidential.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm just fine. You sound, I thought your voice would be very quiet and demure, like, but you're wonderful. You're just, you need a show. You've got a radio voice going already.
Well, I'm just enjoying your show. I listen to it practically every day. You have a wonderful show and wonderful guests, and I'm learning so much about the gay community. I had no idea how wonderful it was. I mean, learned so much. And one of the things I have to mention to you, that I really like that, I was really fascinated with that center that is in Chicago. And
yes, it certainly is. It's called Center on Halsted in Chicago, and I was impressed too.
Oh, I could see myself enjoying going there. And
I completely agree.
What fascinates me about what I've heard from your show is that you're accepting of everyone, and yet when other communities are not accepting of everyone, you know what I mean?
Well, I do, Debbie, know exactly what you mean, and you know, when you've been kicked to the curb, you quickly learn how it feels, and you treat people a little bit better. You really do. It's a wound that makes you not want to wound others in the same way. At least that's the way I personally feel about it. Some people are probably more angry than I am and want to lash out, but I'm not wired that way.
Well, you know, I believe that the gay community is more godly than you feel God more in them, in you all? You're more godlike?
Well, I think I can address that, and I think how that really translates is that gay people have been forced to do a lot of introspection and examining their souls. Now, this is of course not universally true. There are of course gay folks just like straight folks, you know, every variant of attitude and the whole bit. But I think by and large, because we do kind of grow up without a support system, we don't tell our parents, we have this huge secret all of our lives. We look inward for answers because we don't find them outwardly, and I think it just has to do with self-examination. And maybe that's why we're so, well, at least in my case, that's why, I mean, I'm almost starting to feel like a hypocrite because I don't accept everybody. I mean, I get mad too, like the Christians I was beating up at the beginning of the show. But I think it's just introspection, Debbie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that. You have the, you look more inside yourself, and when you look more inside yourself, you get the answers. Those are your answers, and the answers are God-given answers.
Well, it's very, very kind of you to say that, you know, I love you guys too. I really do. I'd be lost without you. I think that most gay folks who've given it any thought would probably answer it approximately the way I just did, though. It's got to do with self-examination.
Wonderfully put, Peter. Thank you. I just wanted to call in and just tell you what a wonderful show you have, and I so enjoy listening to it every day, and what wonderful guests you have, and I commend you for having a wonderful show, and I can't say enough. And thank you.
That's so sweet of you. Thank you so much for saying that. That really does mean a lot to me, because I so wanted this show not to disenfranchise straight people, because you guys are really my very dear friends that have been for a long time, and I didn't want to disenfranchise you but at the same token I wanted to reach out to the, so I just didn't know what I was doing. That's very kind of you, and thank you so much for saying that.
And I'm going to let everybody I know that to let them know that your show does exist, and I've let several of my friends that are that would be interested in listening to it, I let them know about it. And I don't know, I've learned so much, Peter, and thank you. And
well, thank you.
And I'll continue listening and spread the word that you're out there.
Thank you so much. For we have to hang on to each other, because we're all we've got in the final analysis. So
that's right.
You're all I've got. We are each other's keepers in many ways.
I love you, Peter.
And I love you, sweetheart.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Well, what a nice call. I was surprised. In chat, you imagine people. You know, in fact, sometimes you even get the gender wrong. There'll be somebody in chat you'll think is one gender or the other, and it turns out they're not. And it doesn't really matter, but it's these mental images that you have. And I always imagine Debbie, very quiet, but she's a very powerful person, and she says what she means, and I like that. That's just wonderful. Not that I don't want to hear from quiet people. Oh, no, no, no. I want to hear you whisperers, too. There's a story I really want to get in. I think it's important. It's from the American Cancer Society, and it has to do with sexual orientation and cancer. And being from the American Cancer Society, I think at least until we get the new attorney, the medical guy. You know, I'm so turned off by politics I can hardly keep their names straight, but you know the one I mean. Until he takes over, I guess accurate, but... the article is interesting in as much as it talks about a woman named Jean Ward, and she went to an Atlanta hospital four times for pre-surgery tests, and every time she went, there was this dreaded question: are you married or are you single? Well, she's in a 20-year committed relationship with another woman, and then they would ask, is your husband here with you? And, you know, it made her very uncomfortable to have to identify herself as a lesbian, because from previous experience, she felt awkward. And it was kind of a hostile environment. You know, if the clerk found out that you were a lesbian, you can just feel, she says, you can feel their energy just shift and their body language changes, and you have to kind of navigate through it. And prejudice like that plays a role in putting lesbian women and gay men, for that matter, at an increased risk for cancer. Now, there's an oncologist. Her name is Kate O'Hanlon. And she has done a lot of research on the issue. And she has indicated that prejudice and poor access to health care, and there are several other risk factors that add to a growing rate of cancer amongst lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgendered people. Hamlin says that insensitive treatment is actually fairly common, and even though the doctors are well-intentioned, many lesbians and gay men avoid the medical system completely. And lesbians have sort of they anticipate it. They'll say, well, do you take birth control pills? And they'll say, well, no, I don't take birth control pills. And then they'll want to know, well, why don't you take birth control pills? And then you have to say, well, I don't sleep with men. Or you say, well, I haven't slept with a man. And then, you know, well, when's the last time you had sex? So you see, no matter how a woman tries to play this, it comes out because of the whole issue of taking birth control pills. And as a result of that, many lesbians miss a routine preventative care that saves lives by finding cancer early. And the economic data and other data shows that the gay and lesbian community is all medically underserved, which is, of course, the case with a lot of people. And also, lesbians appear to have more risk factors for breast cancer, including having no children. I didn't realize that was a but apparently having no children increases your risk of breast cancer. And also things like alcohol and cigarette use, and there are all the other standard factors too, but there are some added factors there. And of course, many gays and lesbians are self-employed. They're artists and they're craftspeople, and they can't really find any kind of medical insurance plan. So, just a word to the wise. I just thought this article was important, and considering it was from the American Cancer Society, I wanted to tell that to all of our lesbian friends and our gay friends too. You know what I didn't do last week. Last night I did not do what I want to do is go ahead and do the lesbian track of the night, because I did not get to it last night. So I have the same track in line for tonight, and it is just about the best duet I have ever heard. And it's got Katie Lang, God love her. And you know, Katie Lang's career really took off with this duet with Roy Orbison, and it seemed to be a huge turning point. So here is a duet by Katie Lang and Roy Orbison doing Crying.
Could smile for a while. Then I saw you last night. You held my hand so tight when you stopped to say hello. You wished me well. You couldn't tell that
Katie Lang and Roy Orbison. It doesn't get any better than that. Everybody needed a hanky for that particular track. It's an amazing song. I remember I used to have a 45. If you don't know, that's a very old piece of vinyl with a large center hole, and it was 7 inches across, and a 45 of Roy Orbison doing Crying. I always liked that song. And chat room saying they like Pretty Woman, too. I do, too. That was also one of my favorites. I have a little information here about, well, we all know about the D.C. Madam story. We've been hearing a lot about that. This fellow David Vitter has been busted because his phone number has come up in the D.C. Madam's telephone book. And he is apologizing publicly to his wife and saying that he's admitted it to his wife and how they've forgiven her, blah, 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 blah. But I wanted to tell you a little bit about Vitter's statement on the protecting the sanctity of marriage issue prior to his discovery. He says, "This is a real outrage. The Hollywood left is redefining the most basic institution in human history. And the two other U.S. senators won't do anything about it." He's talking about these senators from Louisiana and Massachusetts, or rather Louisiana. He's comparing Louisiana to Massachusetts. Says, "We need a U.S. senator who will stand up for Louisiana values, not Massachusetts values. I am the only state candidate to co-author the federal amendment and the only one fighting for its passage. I am the only candidate," this sanctimonious son of a bitch, "I'm the only candidate proposing changes to the Senate rules to stop liberal obstructionists from preventing an up and down vote on issues like this, judges, energy, and on," said David Vitter. At the time, there were some energy bills, and they wanted the up or down vote on the evil judges. You know, gosh, a Republican whoremonger. You know, can you handle that? I know you're shocked, but I give you an example of the huge. You know, this hypocrisy seems to go hand in glove, doesn't it? Just hand in glove, right down the line with everything these people do. You've got Haggard, who basically fell in love with his male escort. I think I could make a huge case for the fact that he was in love with him, judging from some of the intimate remarks that have been passed along in, I think his name is Mike Jones' novel. And at the same time, appearing in movies like Jesus Camp and being gay people from the pulpit. And we have George Bush who proclaims Christianity and at the same time is lying his little ass off to stay out of prison. Liars, cheats, thieves. And they're protecting marriage. Dear God, you know, if their children were lucky, gay people would go get them and, you know, abduct them, you know, for their own safety. Amazing. And a little short story on Bill Gates. You know, I told you that Bill Gates has invested a certain amount of money in Planet Out to save, the failing public. Apparently, Planet Out owns Advocate and several other magazines. I didn't realize they were as large as they are. They own RSVP Cruises and this, that, and the other. But, you know, I didn't realize the extent to which Bill Gates had invested or to help them out of their financial falling through. Bill Gates has bought 56%, a controlling stake in Planet Out. This, to me, is amazing. I realized that Gates was investing in it, but, dear Lord, the stock went from 86 cents to $14.26, so little Billy made a very good deal there. Planet Out is selling one of its adult magazine division. I don't know what it's called, but apparently Bill Gates didn't wish to be associated with sexual imagery and pornography. I wouldn't either, so I can't blame him for that. But and also, Planet Out actually has a long history with Gates. Apparently back in 1995, MSN launched some kind of a channel. It was a partnership channel with Microsoft's VChat. Now, I've never really heard of VChat, and I guess I'm not surprised because apparently it was largely ignored by everyone and had to launch their own internet internet presence. So there you have it. Bill Gates owns a 56% controlling stake in Planet Out. He obviously invested in money for money rather than anything that has to do with, I think, really supporting the gay community. There was a return there. I guess you can't blame him for that. But gee whiz, Bill, where's our check? For one penny on every dollar you put into that company, we could run this network for 2 years. Just never ceases to amaze me. Let's see, I have a couple of minutes. You know what? I have life now. It's the meaning of life and the meaning of what all this stuff is going on with the religious right and the gay community and everybody else. It's all about lollipops. It's about whether you put the lollipop in your mouth or whether you shove the lollipop somewhere else. And what it all boils down to is fundamentalists are absolutely consumed, spending days and nights thinking about lollipops and where those lollipops go. It's a whole holy war thing about where the lollipop goes and how often it goes there and whether or not Jesus is concerned about where the lollipop goes and whether Satan's force is involved in the direction that the lollipop points. Oh, Jesus, these people never cease to amaze. And these good Christian people, the right wing, you'll find them in church, you'll find them in two places. You're going to find them in church, and then you're going to find them in dark alleys and motel rooms with the curtains drawn at truck rest stops and especially, boy, when the Southern Baptist Convention happens in places like Atlanta. Boy, the escort business, that goes through the roof. Have mercy. You should hear the male and female escorts talking about how they love when the Baptist convention comes to town. And we talked about that La Barbera guy over the last couple of nights. He's with the Family Institute. Now, guess what he calls himself? This is what he is, a professional homosexuality investigator for the religious right. Now, this is just amazing to me. He sacrifices his life to collect gay porn. Now, this is for research only, of course. To go undercover to sexual subculture things like for instance, International Mr. Leather. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it is a subculture of the gay community. But anyway, he goes to all those to expose the threat, that Osama bin Laden has been making and asking fundies to donate to his cause. Boy, it's all about the money, isn't it? They can make a buck on that. That's what they're doing on these treatment centers. It's about the money. Now, quite frankly, I don't think about things like the Mr. Leather contests and where the other people's lollipops go. I mean, I've got enough problems in my life without maybe saying, please keep the lollipop out of them. Oh, Jesus. But I don't think about it. These right-wing Christians, they're obsessed with it day after day. If they would just channel all of that energy for good, can you imagine what a wonderful place this world could be if this were all channeled to helping the homeless or all channeled to figuring out how to help the economy in Mexico so these people wouldn't have to come over here and pick tomatoes for practically nothing and send the money that's practically pittance, send it back to Mexico to help people who are worse off than they are. They're just fixated on it because it doesn't have to do with procreation. And, this guy's like, this La Barbera guy, he's just a walking cry for help. It's difficult to imagine, but that's what they do. Can you imagine being so obsessed with someone else's sex life that you became a professional investigator? It's just amazing to me. I really should go ahead and tell you that I've had a wonderful evening, and thank you so much for being here. You can visit strictlyconfidentialradio.com.